appreciate having Billy Shears, our music director, and all of you as well. Thanks. See you next time. Don't forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Later, gang.
Eaten.
This is the Quality News Network. In Afghanistan, Taliban militants have released 12 of the 19 missionaries taken hostage 6 weeks ago. The release comes after a promise from Seoul to withdraw troops and cease missionary activity. The remaining hostages are expected to be released by tomorrow. Radical Shiite cleric Muqtada al-Sadr has suspended actions of his Mahdi army for 6 months and has claimed they will no longer attack U.S. and coalition forces. According to a Sadr aide, the anti-American cleric wants to reorganize the Mahdi army and rehabilitate it after breaking into factions. Coalition forces killed more than 100 Afghani militants today following an attack on a coalition envoy in Kandahar. One Afghan soldier was killed and 6 others wounded. There were no reports of civilian casualties. Also in Afghanistan, a suicide bomber attacked a bridge under construction in an eastern province, killing 3 U.S. soldiers. 6 other American troops were wounded. President Bush is in the Gulf Coast region today, marking the 2-year anniversary of Hurricane Katrina. The president visited a charter school in New Orleans, where he said better days are ahead. He will also visit Bay St. Louis, Mississippi, while in the region. The former Prime Minister of Pakistan said that Pervez Musharraf will step down as head of the military before the next presidential election. Officials say the decision is a significant step forward in a power-sharing deal with Pakistan's opposition government. Greek firefighters announced today that they have gained control over wildfires that have killed 63 people in recent days. The government has been hit with accusations of incompetence for their handling of the situation. After detaining them in a central Baghdad hotel last night, U.S. troops this morning released 8 captive Iranians, turning them over to Iraqi authorities. The U.S. said they were arrested for carrying guns without the necessary permits. The Washington Post reports President Bush is poised to ask Congress for another $50 billion to fund the Iraq War. Congress has thus far allocated $607 billion for the 2008 Pentagon budget. An internal Army investigation faults trainers at Fort Hood, Texas, for the June death of an Iraq War veteran during maneuvers. 24 other soldiers were hospitalized during the grueling training exercises. 8 trainers may face criminal charges. In Idaho, a wildfire is roaring toward Sun Valley Ski Resort, fed by high winds and soaring temperatures. You're listening to the Quality News Network, Science and Business, next.
Here's good news about your money. Monterey County Bank has won the Bauer Financial 5-Star Superior Rating for financial strength and stability, making it one of the safest banks in Monterey County for your money. It's nice to know your money is in a safe place, but there are even more reasons to bank with Monterey County Bank. They now have 4 convenient locations in Carmel, Monterey, Carmel Valley, and Pacific Grove. And Monterey County Bank is the oldest locally owned bank, now celebrating its 30th anniversary serving you. Here's another important point. Local businesses have come to trust and rely on Monterey County Bank's position as the county's number one SBA small business lender. Safety, convenience, and local people you can trust. That's Monterey County Bank. Stop in at one of our 4 branches and find out why you can bank on us. Monterey County Bank, SBA preferred lender and equal housing lender, member FDIC.
It's a major but not unexpected development. The deadly bird flu has mutated so it can be passed on from person to person. The UN has long predicted a devastating international pandemic. Researchers at NOAA are blaming human activity as the biggest reason for record-breaking warm temperatures last year in 48 states. NASA today will release its internal investigation into reports astronauts were intoxicated before launches. Officials say they are optimistic the report will indicate the problem was minor. The College Board says math and reading SAT scores this year were the lowest in 8 years. The board attributes the poor high school senior scores to a more diverse group of test takers. The test was changed 2 years ago. Pharmacy benefits manager Medco will acquire diabetes specialist PolyMedica for $1.2 billion. The deal is expected to increase Medco's diabetic client base by 1 million customers. Share of Dillard's department store chain fell 3.5% after it announced a quarterly loss of more than $25 million. The Arkansas-based company noted a drop in sales. Light sweet crude is trading at $73.55 a barrel. Gold is trading at $674.40 an ounce. Wall Street has rebounded today. The Dow is up 174 points. NASDAQ up 41. S&P 500 up 20. There's more on our website at qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Reed Kavner.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. Whenever fellow talk show host Bob Kincaid and I get into one of our three-hour discussions off-air, oh, and yes, we do have three-hour discussions off-air. You don't think that all this talking a lot just goes on the radio, do you? But whenever Bob and I get into one of our marathon discussions, as we often do, it seems the topic always turns around to religion. And why shouldn't it? Religion plays a major role in his life and in my life, whether running toward it or running from it. 91% of American adults say they believe in God. 87% identify with a specific religion. 82% identify with Christianity, and another 5% with Judaism or Islam, and I guess the other religions are too small to make the survey. But religion plays a major part in our lives. It determines how we think about the world, our philosophy. And for some of us that have grown up, like Bob, and he'll explain his background in just a minute, in a more fundamentalist faith, it's the reaction against that faith that very much determines a worldview. So we have all kinds of Americans, from those that reacted against their faith to those that strongly believe in their faith to someone like me. I consider myself in the middle. I certainly am not an Orthodox Jew. I am not a fundamentalist in that regard. But I do accept religion, and I do respect religion. And when Bob and I were talking about our reactions to fundamentalist Christianity, I realized that my own feelings toward my own religion have perhaps made me a bit more sympathetic to some of the people that I saw in other religions. Anyway, this all turned out to be the fodder for a really good discussion. So Bob and I are going to talk for 2 hours today, the entire hour of my show and the first hour of his show, on religion. But it's not just a discussion between Bob and me. We fully expect those of you listening in to join in and give us your two cents. Tell us where you agree, where you disagree, how your own religious upbringing affects your own philosophy, whether it be political or moral or anything else. So all you have to do, of course, is pick up the phone and join in at 877-4-HEAD-ON. Bob Kincaid, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hey, Mark.
So I've talked about, just sort of writ large, religion up there. Let me ask you about your background. You often say you were raised in the Southern Baptist Church. You introduce your shows as a prayer meeting.
Only on Wednesdays.
All right, fair enough. Why do you do that?
Well, as a recovering Southern Baptist, and you know, the recovery is never complete.
Okay.
I mean, it's just like any other, whether it's AA or NA or any of those. You're never cured, because the insidiousness of fundamentalism, as represented by the Southern Baptist Church, the Churches of Christ, and I'm not talking about the good church, the UCC. I'm not talking about those people. I'm talking about the weirdos that, like, well, let's put it this way. Where I grew up, Mark, being Southern Baptist was being moderate. Okay, the real hardcores were the Churches of Christ, because there was a joke that went, you know, the pastor and his secretary were getting it on one day, and they were moving over toward the window, and all of a sudden he threw her on the floor, and she said, "Why'd you do that, Brother Johnson?" And he said, "Somebody might have looked in the window and thought we was dancing."
Now, tell me about specifically the church you grew up in.
I grew up in...
It was Southern Baptist.
Yeah, I grew up in a Southern Baptist church.
Did they allow dancing in your church?
Well, you know, we didn't really ask. You know, that's, you know, again, one-liner after one-liner, but what is it? The Protestants don't recognize the supremacy of the Pope. The Pope doesn't recognize the supremacy of Muhammad, and Baptists don't recognize each other at the liquor store.
You got to understand, I don't come from this background, so I don't understand exactly what was allowed, what was not allowed, and what was wink-wink allowed. So tell me about this. You grew up in a small town in West Virginia, right?
No, I grew up in a medium-sized town in Alabama.
Oh, excuse me. That's right. Your family's from West Virginia. You grew up in a medium-sized town in Alabama
where
I assume that there's just Baptists and Methodists and black people.
Oh, no, no, no. Baptists, Methodists, Presbyterians, Lutherans, Catholics. Everybody was there.
Oh, okay. All right. You're big enough to have some Lutherans and Catholics. All right.
Oh, yeah. And don't forget the Whiskey Episcopals.
The Whiskey Episcopals.
Yes.
This is very complicated for me.
I understand.
But go ahead.
it was a large Southern Baptist church that I started attending when I was maybe 3 years old. And I attended it faithfully until I was 18.
And did you believe it from age 3 to 18?
You're darn right. Well,
okay, so all the way to 18,
it starts wearing off a little bit in high school.
Okay.
And
what did they teach you? I would say you can't tell me all of this in sitting there in 3 minutes, but the essence of what they taught you, a lot of hell and damnation?
Sure. The first time I ever heard a full-grown man screaming his full head off was in church, and that was Brother Jerry.
Was he speaking in tongues?
No. He was just, and the Lord will bless. Oh, you know. I mean, you've turned on the TV. You've heard it.
Yeah. No. No. Okay. All right.
But you know, it scared me to death. 3 years old, getting screamed at by some dude. he seemed like he was 19 feet tall.
I'm sure he was, particularly when he was screaming at you.
Yeah.
But tell me this. What was allowed and what was not allowed? Like dancing, alcohol? Just go through the gamut for me.
Well,
coffee?
You don't stand outside the front of the church before services and honk on your liquor bottle. You do that at home.
Is it allowed or was it condemned?
It was roundly condemned and roundly done.
Okay. Gotcha.
All right.
About dancing?
Dancing's okay. It was okay.
Oh, it is. Okay, you weren't in the Ashcroft school then.
No. And nobody got olive oil poured on them during the sermons. No.
Okay. All right. I'm just trying to figure it out.
You know, we had communion about once a month, and it was, you know, basically a crappy little saltine and a glass of, and a little swig of grape juice, because it was explained to us that what it meant. And I'm not kidding, Mark. I'm not kidding. When they say wine in the Bible, what they really mean is grape juice. I heard that. You know, Jesus turned the water into grape juice. They just called it wine.
Well, they do call it, I have to say, knowing the Hebrew, they call it the fruit of the vine. But I should tell you, they also talk about its intoxication. And I just don't know too many people that get drunk on grape juice.
No. And, you know, what's the Jesus' first miracle was turning water into wine at the wedding at Cana. And
exactly. Grape juice would have been a lesser miracle, you think?
What's the point? You know, I just, you know,
maybe people like grape juice. I don't know.
I don't haul out a jug of Welch's and get and feel like dancing.
Okay, so then both your parents were religious, I assume.
My father less than my mother, but yeah, you got to understand that on my mother's side, I am descended from the great circuit rider of Western Virginia, a man named Sam Black.
Okay.
You know, rode from town to town. You know,
sure.
He could,
the Great Awakening of the early 1800s.
Mid 1800s. Yeah. He could smell chicken frying from 20 miles away.
I don't even know what that means, Bob.
Preachers don't work.
Okay.
Okay. They get fed by somebody else who works their ass off. The parishioners.
You know, the same thing holds in the old Jewish shtetl. What happened was the scholars were the highest. They were the people who were studying all the time, and they were so busy studying that they didn't have time to work. And so the entire community would support them because, after all, they're studying and getting closer to God, and they're educating the entire community. And so, therefore, since, you know, they're the most important, everyone else would do the mundane workaholic thing, and they would fund them. In fact, in Israel today, if you're extremely religious, you can get out of army duty, which, let me tell you, makes secular Israelis pretty upset. But that is the role of some Orthodox.
Well, doesn't Orthodoxy control the divorce laws in Israel as well?
They do. They do. Well, they, for Jews. I mean, the way Israel has figured it out is that they say we need the freedom of religion, and since every religion treats marriage something differently, they throw it in the hands of the religious authorities. So, 12 different Christian groups determine, religion for whether you are Catholic or Lutheran or whatever, you know, and then the Muslim groups determine it for the Muslims, and the Orthodox get it for the Jews, which doesn't make the conservative reform very happy, and particularly since 3/4 of Israelis are not religious.
So
a problem.
So shall I understand then, Mark, that Sharia law that causes the fundamentalists, among others, to just have kittens with crocheted tails over here. America would fall apart if Sharia law was, you know, all of that. The Sharia law is practiced in the Muslim community in Israel?
It is, but only for family matters.
Right.
I mean, let's be clear. It's certainly not for criminal law. They don't cut people's hands off. You know, and certainly there are taxes and all kinds of things that have nothing to do with religion. But when it comes to family matters, for example, things like marriage, there are differences. Israel insists on the fundamental equality of men and women, which, you know, Muslim law doesn't, and to some extent Jewish law doesn't, frankly. You know, ancient Orthodox Jewish law. So Israel insists on the fundamental equality of men and women. But other than that, they generally let religious authorities handle religious matters. Divorce is considered one of those religious matters, and they do it, frankly, because they feel like people are going to have a riot, probably, if they didn't.
Yeah, marriage, divorce, exactly right. Adoption,
those kinds
family
of things,
law kinds
true.
Of things. Yeah.
Which is interesting, because you get to a point, for example, in Israel, where gay people serve openly in the military, have full and absolute rights under Israeli law. They can't get married unless the rabbi says they can get married, but they have something equivalent to like a civil union. It's interesting because in doing that, they are essentially saying that you can get married outside of the religion, and but they just don't call it a marriage.
Well, see, I think that's one of the places I would hope that this conversation goes this afternoon, Mark, is this question, and you can see it everywhere, and it's practiced in its most pernicious form by fundamentalist Christianity in this country. The city of Athens, Alabama, okay, straight down I-65 uh-huh. from where you grew up.
Right. In Nashville, Tennessee.
Right. 40 miles east of where I grew up. They had a referendum yesterday because the followers of Jesus had decided that they didn't want the city of Athens selling demon rum in the restaurants anymore, or in the 7-Eleven for that matter.
And how long had Athens been a wet county?
4 years.
Okay, because Nashville, I know, was a dry county until the 1960s. But it hasn't been since then. And another thing I should tell you, speaking of hypocrisy, is that one of my favorite liqueurs, Jack Daniel's, in fact, the oldest, I believe, continuous distillery in the United States, because they didn't stop during Prohibition, they just kept on running.
Right.
Happens to be in Lynchburg, Tennessee,
and
in a dry county.
You can't buy no Jack Daniel's in Lynchburg, Tennessee.
Well, actually, you can at the factory, you just can't drink it there.
Yeah.
But people do.
Yeah. Well, you know, when I moved to other places in the country after my growing up, I would explain to them that I was raised in a dry county, and they went, "What the hell is that?" And I'd have to explain to them that, you know, you can't buy wine or beer or liquor at all, you know, at all. And they'd look at me like I had just landed from Mars.
Let me go back to your religious upbringing, because I think it's important in sort of structuring where you come from, where your ideas come from. Did you get a firm sense of right and wrong?
Sorta.
Was right determined by the Bible?
Yeah, and God speaks Elizabethan English, and the only
King
Bible
James Version.
Is the King James Version, yes.
Okay. Go ahead.
Wait, I got all kinds of great moral upbringings. Okay, down in the basement in the nursery of the Baptist church. You know, simple life lessons. You know, what was it? Robert Fulghum wrote that book, Everything I Need to Know I Learned in Kindergarten. Remember that?
Right, right. Right, I do.
That kind of stuff. You know, don't take his donut, and he won't take your glass of grape juice. Mm-hmm. You know, don't pinch her, and she won't poke your eyes. You know, basic rules for getting. But then you get to the top of the stairs, and you see that the rules only apply sort of in theory, because when you move into the social circles of the church and you find out which deacon is in bed with which secretary and all of that stuff, you
know, or an atheist friend. And did you ever try to save anyone, Bob?
I tried to save the life of a Jewish boy that went to elementary school with me. Not his soul. His life.
What happened?
He lived on the corner across from the school, and his family kept kosher, so he couldn't sit down and eat lunch with us in the lunchroom. And so he left at lunch every day and went across the street and had his lunch. And that created a sense of separation.
Sure.
And the other little heathens would yell, "Jerry, Jerry, Jerry Jew, Jerry Jew."
Mm.
And Jerry, to make things worse, had a horrible speech impediment.
Oh, no.
And he was slight of frame.
Probably had a New York accent.
No.
These are Alabama.
This is Southern Jewry.
Okay. The kind I grew up in, actually.
And his mother was as sweet as can be. And I grieved to see the way that people treated him.
So what'd you do? What happened?
He'd be alone on the playground. I'd go over and, you know, we'd climb trees or play or do something. And
you felt like you needed to reach out to this poor, shunned fellow student.
I didn't feel like I needed to. I felt like I wanted to. Okay. That was what I was told.
So you were born with compassion, Bob, I guess. That's a good thing.
I like to hope so. And then came the day that, the day that they tried to hang him.
Hang him?
Yeah, in sixth grade.
With a rope?
It wasn't with a rubber band.
They put him up in a tree? What happened?
Yeah. A boy named Buddy, who had a full mustache in sixth grade, and
okay.
lived out on a farm, lived out on the farm in the county, decided he was going to, and he got all the other boys together, and they sang, we'll hang Jerry, and I'll leave his last name, from the sour apple tree, and fashioned a noose, and strung it from the tree, and hung him so that just his tip of his toes touched the ground.
Were no teachers around?
No. Nobody was watching. Big playground. They
literally forced him into a rope and hung him from a tree.
Yes.
I assume he was screaming.
Yeah. Yeah, he was.
Wow. And what happened then?
And I went and told.
Okay, good for you.
And got the living crap beat out of me for it.
What? By the other kid?
Sure.
Did they get in trouble?
They got a good talking to.
I see. Yes, you don't hang. They may be going to hell, them Jews, but we don't hang them on school property.
Let Jesus kill them.
Terrible.
So,
oh my God.
Yeah, I mean, and this is, you know, this is just it's, and I don't want to create some impression that I grew up in some hellhole, because I didn't. It's a lovely community. It's a beautiful place to this day. But it is, and this is, I guess, part and parcel of the conversation we're having over the course of the next hour and a half or so. It is a beautiful place that is made a horror by religion. Because everything that has been done, that is evil in the Deep South, has been done uniformly in the name of Christ Jesus. Okay?
And does that make you, Bob, automatically suspicious, angry, oppositional to really any kind of religion or religious teaching? Or are you careful to say, no, it's these particular brand of fundamentalist Christianity?
I'm suspicious of them all.
I
feel like it's only rational to be that, because any time that you declare that something that is going on and can only go on in your heart becomes an organizational issue, and that organizational issue starts dictating policy and declaring who lives and who dies, literally, then if you don't question it, you're actually worse than the people who are doing it.
Okay. Fair enough. By the way, folks, I'm mostly asking the questions here because this is my hour of the show. Bob will have a full hour to grill me over the coals as well. I assure you, this will not be merely me as interrogator. He'll do the same to me, and that's the way fairness lies. Folks, if you want to join in the discussion, please do. We'd love to have you. It's 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. We'll be right back after this.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
It wasn't exactly planes, trains, and automobiles on Head On with Bob Kincaid.
This is what the Bush Administration Justice Department didn't want you to see back in 2001. They took out and they huffed the marker a little bit, and then they went, oh, cool. And they wiped out the name where it says, the plane was chartered either by the Saudi Arabian royalty family or Osama bin Laden. Somebody's got to call up and say, good afternoon. Thank you for calling Ryan International Flights. How may I help you?
Hello. This is Osama bin Laden, and I would like to rent a Boeing 727. Do you have one handy?
Oh, just a moment. Let me check. It's a Mr. bin Laden wants to know if we got a 727. Do we, Harry, do we have a 727?
Yeah, we got a 727 just sitting there on the lot. Going cheap. There's nothing here, nothing to look at. Keep moving. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain, the 6'7" Arab with the portable dialysis machine and the white robes.
Head On with Bob Kincaid, weeknight, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern, only on the Head On Radio Network.
There's a place where a total stranger will give their blood to save your life. There's a place where someone you never knew will save your child from drowning. A place where people will give you food and shelter after a flood. There's a place where, when you need it most, someone will reach out their hand, put it across your shoulder, and say, everything's going to be okay. That place is called America, where we look out for each other. And it's up to us to keep it that way. When you help the American Red Cross, you help America. Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org today.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. The title of today's show is Bob and Mark Got Religion. I think for most of us, religion informs our lives. Either it gives us a world outlook or reacting against it gives us a world outlook. It's kind of hard to live in America and not be affected in some way or another by religion. And I'm quizzing Bob Kincaid on his religious upbringing and how it informed his political and philosophical views. But don't worry, I'll get the same interrogation in the next hour on his show where he asked me all the tough questions. Of course, you all are welcome to join in the discussion. I've got a couple of you on the line already, and if you want to comment on the blog, you know, some of you like to write rather than to talk, just go to RadioInsideScoop.com. Three callers now, but we'll get to each and every one of you. Susan first, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hi, Mark.
Hello, Susan.
what are your thoughts? I would hate to the kids in Alabama would have to do with somebody who was open about being a witch.
Witch would be hung faster than the Jew.
Yeah, exactly. There is, after all, that line in the Bible.
Suffer not a witch to live.
Exactly.
Where is that line in the Bible? Because I don't know
that
one.
That's your part of it, Mark.
Is it?
Uh-oh. Yeah, that one's your fault.
Uh-oh. Where is that one?
Don't have it off.
The book?
Don't have it offhand. I just
don't. Because I want to look at the original Hebrew. You know, that's one of the things that King James did. He sort of ruined a bunch of our Hebrew, translating young woman into virgin and all kinds of things. And so, I'm not saying it's not there, but, I just want to check up.
I think that wasn't the Witch of Endor?
That's not in my Bible. That might be in the Apocrypha.
I would.
Hold
like
on. I'll Google it as we go on. But
I've got
ahead.
It. I've got it right here.
Okay.
Exodus 22:18.
Ooh, that's the heart of it. All right, I'll check it
Thou
out.
Thou shalt not suffer a witch to live.
Yeah, if you can give me a real good translation from the Hebrew that doesn't come out of the King James, I would be grateful.
What I'm looking at here, Susan, indicates it might actually, the proper translation, and Mark would be the authority on this, is suffer not a poisoner to live.
That makes
okay,
a lot
that
more
that
sense.
That I can understand.
But I'll tell you what, I will, in the break, I will look it up, and I will get you an answer to that, I promise, before these 2 hours are through. What else did you want to talk about?
Well, I did want to mention that I spent some time in Virginia as a child, and it was not a dry county, but I did run into the total illogic of their blue laws. You could buy a can of beer, but you couldn't buy a razor on Sunday.
Oh, wow. Never heard that one.
Because you can't shave on Sunday? Or you can't, cut someone on Sunday?
It was just completely illogical. It made no sense. I can remember my father he's where I got my temper from, and I can remember him just practically screaming.
Good word. Where did you grow up? What state did you grow up in?
In South Seattle, but he worked for Boeing, and so he spent some time putting in some Bullmark missile bases in Norfolk, Virginia.
Oh, in Virginia. Okay. I was going to say, I could imagine this in Washington State, but I certainly buy it in Norfolk, Virginia.
Yeah, and those blue laws were just... But he could walk right past where he couldn't buy a razor and pick up a six-pack of beer.
And the South is rife with all of that.
It made no sense.
Not just
at all.
The South. Massachusetts has blue laws.
Well, true.
You'd be shocked to know. I mean, here it is, the most liberal state in the United States. It's a really strange thing. I remember thinking, I've always thought, in fact, that blue laws are discriminatory. Because, heck, we celebrate the Sabbath on Saturday, and it was our day first. We did it for 2,000 years before y'all up and changed it. So, if you're going to have a blue law, why is it on your Sabbath? The Muslim Sabbath is Friday.
Well, it's not even our Sabbath, though. We got it wrong.
You got it from me, guys. You stole it from my religion.
What, from the witches? Did they celebrate it on Sunday, the Wiccans?
We predate you by about 10,000 years.
Truthfully.
But do the Wiccans have a seven-day week and a Sabbath day on Sunday?
No.
Because I thought we invented the Sabbath. I thought that my people would get credit for that.
We have a... Our Sabbats are more or less quarterly.
Okay, they're not based on a seven-day week.
No, uh-uh. It's lunar.
But you got to remember, Mark, when Abram of Ur of the Chaldees became a separatist and left civilization, he took a little bit of civilization with him.
No question about it. The Babylonians celebrated a seven-day week. What the Jews added was the idea of a rest day. The seven-day week, you're absolutely right, predates Judaism. It does come from the Babylonians. Our addition was the idea that you don't work 7 days. You don't work all day long every day. You actually get one day in seven when you get to rest. And it's actually connected with a couple socialist ideas, which are also in the Hebrew Bible, including the idea that you have a sabbatical for your land, that once in 7 years you let it lie fallow, let it get its nutrients, and then you give a corner of it to the poor. And then at 7 times 7, 49 years, after the 50th year, you actually redistribute the wealth. The idea is that land cannot be held in perpetuity by anybody. It is, after all, God's, not human.
And that part of it does flow down. The fundamentalists like to talk about how the Judeo-Christian ethic is the source of our law in America, which is mostly BS. But
I don't remember the Jubilee year in America.
Haven't had one. See.
No, and I haven't gotten my piece.
Exactly.
My 40 acres and a mule.
I want Rockefellers.
No, I mean, they talk a lot about Jesus and the capital gains tax cut, but, the Jubilee year, let's face it, this absolutely socialist idea that is in the oldest part of the Bible, did you ever talk about that in church, Bob, or did you skip over that?
Oh, no. Jubilee was what happened on Sunday morning when the Happy Goodman family came on. It was the Happy Goodman family singing Jubilee.
Susan, I want to thank you for your call. We got a couple other people on the line. I want to give them a chance, too. But thanks for calling in.
Thanks,
Susan. Let's go to Dave. Dave, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Very interesting program today, guys. Enjoying it.
Well, you know, it's August in Washington. Not too much politics going on. So we thought we'd go get religion. What are your thoughts?
Well, I am one of those people that believes that religion has been behind so much serious harm to this planet that I want as little to do with it as I can. One of the things that was drawn to my attention by one of my heroes, Bertrand Russell, years ago, was that we live on a planet that has some 5,500 recognized religions, and most of which believe that theirs is the one right religion, and most of them believe that everybody else is doomed.
Mm-hmm.
That alone tells me every thinking person should rethink what they happen to be a part of.
Now Bertrand Russell was a well-renowned atheist. Do you consider yourself an atheist, Dave?
Well, I think of myself as a non-theist for sure. I don't have nothing against really the term atheist, except that says I contend that I can prove that I know that I can't do that. I think I can come up with an overwhelming amount of evidence that there is not any such divine force as people tend to think there is. If there is, I think man has an obligation to hunt him down and kill him for the harm that's let happen on this country.
Well, let me ask you this, Dave, and I want to ask actually Bob the same question, all right? Understanding and agreeing with you both about all the dramatic harm that religion has caused in the world, and I don't dispute a lick of it, do you think that religion has also done some good, or is it pure harm to you? Let me ask Dave the question first.
I have found some people that are really good people, and it has to do with their religious belief. I have to be honest about that. I found that even with some of the fundamentalists, and I certainly found it with the Baha'is and some Catholics, there's good people, and they're good people because they have found the right things in their holy readings that they haven't.
Or were they good people already who just happened to have religion?
That might be an accurate view of it. I don't know. I think
Bob,
you know, most of the atheists and non-theists that I have known are really good people.
Most atheists I have known are very good people as well. Bob, what's your view?
I think we
agree with the harms. What about the benefits?
Well, if you visualize this, Mark, as a matter of someone holding scales and, you know, holding up the balance,
okay,
and you take all the good that religion has done, and you put those on the side of the scale first, and you let it weigh that scale all the way down to the ground. When you take all the evil that has done and drop it on the other side, it will fling the good stuff out of the solar system.
Okay, but here's my complaint with what you have to say, and I agree with you. Let me just say I agree with you. But part of the problem is throwing everything in the one basket of religion.
I'm answering your question.
All the various religions wouldn't sit in the same basket together. To me, it's like throwing, you know, nuclear and chemical and biological and all calling it WMD. So we all know that nuclear is the only weapon of mass destruction.
Well, but look.
Can't we give religion, each religion, their own scale?
No, because you know, I can point to every person listening. There's a strong chance that every person listening to this program has, in generations past, had family members who were tortured or killed or subjected to some level of evil by a religious persecution. 15 million European women were burned at the stake, Mark, for being witches. And what constituted witchcraft was petting a black cat. It was bathing...
Advocating for women's rights?
No, simpler than that. Bathing a woman before she gave birth. Okay? That's witchery. And it got people killed. 15 million, okay? Something like 15 to 30 million Native Americans. The continents of the Americas were more...
Wait a minute.
The continents of the Americas were more populous at the time that the most Christian Spanish Empire landed.
Oh, we lost it. Go ahead.
Christianity was the point of the spear for the conquista of Mexico and South America.
Yeah, let me just understand. I want to make sure you're clear here, because there's a huge difference between conquering, killing, and genocide of Native Americans simply because white men want their territory, and killing them because they're not Christian. I certainly Certainly, there were large massacres because we wanted the land that they didn't that they had. But how much of this was done in the name of religion?
Virtually all of it at the very beginning, especially where the Spanish and the Portuguese were concerned.
Because they were heathens.
Yeah.
So they could convert and avoid the
yes,
death?
Yes.
Well, actually, that's true because that was the Inquisition. Now that I think about it, the Spanish and the Portuguese were doing it to my people as well.
Right, right, and there were persecutions of the what were they called, the Muranos, that took place in Mexico as well.
Yeah, yeah. Murano actually.
But back up, please, because I'm not. Yeah. This is a long answer. Okay, so please bear with me for just a moment. We have just touched on the evil that was done by the church, the Christian church.
Right.
We haven't even touched on the crusader slaughterers of the civilian inhabitants of Jerusalem during the Crusades. Haven't even gotten there.
That's true. Or in Europe on the way to Jerusalem.
But now
they figured they might as well kill their Jews next door. Why go all the way to Jerusalem?
But now let's back up. Let's back up a little bit and find out where they learned this kind of behavior. Go to Deuteronomy 25, Mark. Go to Deuteronomy 25 and see the justification of the Lord God Almighty instructing the children of Israel to kill every living thing and leave not a man nor woman nor child alive upon the earth. Go to Deuteronomy 25 and see for yourself, as you probably already have, the first justification of genocide in written language.
I don't know that it's the first, but it's certainly one of the earliest.
So, you know, do they get separate baskets? No, they don't get separate baskets. They're all killers. You know, do you segregate the killers who killed with a knife from the killers who killed with a gun? No, they're killers. And they do it in the name of something invisible.
I'll tell you something. My understanding, for example, of Jewish history is you really can't think of those things as religious wars. What it was were peoples wanted to occupy territory. And, yeah, they said God gave it to them and they should have it. And the other people said, well, my God gave it to me and I should have it. And it's interesting because most historical scholars of the Bible that I've studied don't believe that passage in Deuteronomy or, frankly, the entire book of Joshua is historical. If you read the Bible, you know, for example, that in Judges and Samuel, they describe an entirely different conquest from in Joshua. In Joshua, and at the end of Deuteronomy, it's, you know, Joshua blows the horn, and the walls fall down, and the sun stands still, and all this stuff, and it is a brutal massacre. But interestingly enough, that was considered to be something that the Jews wrote later as a way to sort of justify what they'd done, when really, if you look at the book of Judges, or the book of Samuel, you see they win some battles, they lose some battles, they have different leaders, there's infighting among each other, and I think one of the reasons the scholars are more likely to believe that is the accurate history is precisely because it's not so clear-cut as Deuteronomy.
And that's a scholarly approach to it, but how did I preface it, Mark? I said, look at where the church learned it from.
Right. No, I hear you.
Okay. Because they're not discriminating, and whenever Holy Mother Church needed an excuse to kill somebody, they ran to the Bible. And just as all people working evil and iniquity on the face of this planet have always run to the Bible. During the 1850s,
plenty of iniquity from people who haven't run to the Bible.
If they didn't have the Bible available to them.
There's been plenty of, look, I'm not justifying religious violence, but there's been plenty of atheist violence, too. I mean, the Nazis, the communists, I could think of some pretty Maoist, you know, pretty rotten, non-religious genocide.
Mark, Adolf Hitler was baptized into the Roman Catholic Church, and there was, in fact, during the Second World War, a persecution of a Roman Catholic priest who sought his excommunication. Okay? The Roman Catholic Church has not excommunicated Adolf Hitler to this day.
That is true.
Just as the Southern Baptist Church has not withdrawn the ordination of Fred Phelps. Joseph Stalin was schooled in a monastery.
So in your view, Nazism and communism, despite the fact that they proclaim atheism, really stem out of Christianity.
Well, Nazism didn't proclaim atheism. Communism
proclaimed atheism. Nazism gave skepticism to Christianity, but you're right. It did not proclaim atheism. That's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair.
I can't see where the good ever can outweigh the evil, because, among other things, the good people that Dave referenced, good people are good people. You don't learn to be good. Okay? Good people, if you know a very good person...
You don't learn to be good?
No.
Oh, come on, Bob.
No.
Your mom telling you not to steal the toy from the fellow preschooler? Sure you learn to be good.
Do you think it's just natural? If you know a person who is Muslim, and that Muslim person is good, that Muslim person would be good without Islam. The same with Judaism, the same with Christianity.
Yeah, but don't you think that parental teaching plays a major role in someone's moral outlook? And not just parental teaching, church teaching, mosque, synagogue teaching as well. But morality is taught, isn't it? I mean, both good and bad. I mean, listen, racism is taught too.
Well,
I don't think children are naturally racist. But I do think that compassion is something where a child sees his or her mother or father do something good for someone, and the child thinks or learns, I'm going to do something good for someone. And if they see their father or mother sitting around drinking and mistreating their employee or whatever, then they may be likely to do the same. I mean, children follow what their parents do, don't they?
Yeah, but that's parenting. That's not religion.
Well, but when you said that in effect there's, you know, you don't learn to be good. Sure, you learn to be good. And to some extent, parents teach to be good based on religious teaching.
And that religious teaching, 9 times out of 10, I mean, like I said, the first real good scare I ever got, and I can't remember if Brother Jerry came before the flying monkeys in The Wizard of Oz or vice versa, but those are the two most terrifying events of my childhood. The flying monkeys.
Flying monkeys.
Yeah. And the screaming about hell and damnation. If you have to use the threat of hell to get somebody to behave, that person wasn't going to behave, and that person likely won't behave, and they'll look somewhere in religion for an excuse. Just as for instance, a great anecdote. One of the great skeptics, perhaps atheists of the early 20th century, was of course the wonderful comedian W.C. Fields.
Yes, he was.
And in his old age, he had lived quite the dissolute life. And as some would say, and at one point, one of his friends drives by, and Fields is sitting out on his porch, you know, the lap blanket on. He's old, he's dying, and he's got a Bible in his hands. And his friend stops and says, "Fields, you old atheist, what are you doing reading that thing?" And Fields looks slowly up at his friend and says, "Looking for a loophole." And that's what most people do. They look for justification of their actions, whether it's institutional or individual.
Yes, they do.
If you think back to the 1840s and the 1850s and the debate over slavery, the abolitionist movement
both
arose,
sides use the Bible.
Right. The abolitionist movement arose in the North and in parts of the South as well. It should be noted, especially in your native Tennessee.
That's true. Virginia
and,
too.
And West Virginia, which didn't
particularly
exist
West
yet.
Virginia, right. Western
but Virginia. But it was that model of let my people go. It was the Mosaic model that was adopted by them. On the other hand, in the South, preachers, who were of course supported largely by the plantation owners, relied upon the writings of that greatest of Christians, St. Paul, who acknowledged and put the imprimatur of Almighty God on slavery.
You know, I do look at religion historically, and I look at the differences, and let me give you some of the things, the good things, I think, that at least my religion, and that's really the only one I can speak for, has brought to humanity, all right? So here's the good side of the equation. Number one, you get a day off every 7 days. The weekend is a Jewish invention. I'm very proud of that one. That's actually my personal favorite, okay? There were slaves under Jewish law, but they were the first slaves that had rights. They had rights under Jewish law. You had to treat them humanely. The whole idea of eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, was changed from Babylonian law, that was the Code of Hammurabi, to the idea that if you accidentally took your slave's tooth out, you were to give him his freedom. That was as valuable to him as a tooth, and that's there in Jewish law. There's also the idea, and this is particularly to Jewish law, that the king is not divine. Now, that's crucial. Under Pharaoh, who, I mean, he had his own religion. I guess it's fair to say everyone did. But under Egyptian religion, theology, the pharaoh was the king. He was to be worshipped as the king. He was the king. He was God.
He was divine.
I meant to say he was divine, and he was to be worshipped as a god, and whatever he said went, because he was God. In the book of Samuel, you have this wonderful passage where, you know, the people demand a king, and the prophet, and they're talking, and the prophet Samuel says, the king is going to abuse you, he's going to take your land, he's going to tax you, and the people are afraid of the Philistines, and they want a king. But they actually talk about, in one of these old documents, and you can point to Deuteronomy, I can point to Samuel, the benefits and the negatives of having a king. You won't find that anywhere else in the ancient world.
Well, God told them that the way I learned it, you know, when the children of Israel said, we want a king like everybody else has a king.
Right.
God said, you really don't want one.
Yeah, you really don't want one. But that was through Samuel. And then there's this wonderful passage where it's King Ahab wants a vineyard from Naboth, who's just this poor slobbering, you know, guy who has a vineyard. And Ahab wants his vineyard. And so he sends Naboth off to war to die. And takes his vineyard, mm-hmm. As his wife Jezebel told him he could do. And then the prophet, Elijah, says, no, you can't do that. And Ahab says, what do you mean I can't do that? I'm the king. I can do whatever I want. And Elijah says, no, you're not the king. God's the king. So let me suggest to you that for all the harm religion has done, at least the idea that no man is above the law, it may predate Judaism, I don't know, but I can guarantee you there, right there in the book of Kings and in the book of Judges. So I'm not willing to throw all religion out in one great basket. Admitting all the things that you say, Bob, I recognize that there are benefits that religion has given humanity. Now,
well,
we
there
a
are,
bunch
there
of callers.
Look, there are okay. benefits that religion has given me. And what we're going to do, if you don't mind, Mark, we'll just shoot straight through this and we'll just...
That's fine. We'll skip the break.
Yeah, we'll skip the break. We'll roll the intro to the program just so it'll make sense on Ben's archives.
No problem.
And then we'll go on from there.
And then you take over the interrogation, and I have to answer the question.
Well, I like the way this is working, but what I wanted to throw toward you, religion did good for me. Let's get something straight. I was very happy in that congregation as a child. Okay, very happy indeed.
Community support.
Yeah, and learning the Bible. I went on later on to take the. I'm sure you're familiar with the graduate records exam, the GRE.
Yes.
It was offered on a Saturday morning after I had been out being a very bad person on a Friday night, and I hadn't studied appropriately. And I went in, and I took the GRE, and I'd say 60% of it was Bible-based.
No way.
Way. And I came, you know, and I
what?
Came out... I came out with this...
What do you mean 60% of it was Bible-based?
Well, questions about, you know, who flung dung in the Bible. You know, I mean...
What? The GRE?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not kidding. And I came out with a...
That's
with
just
a,
weird.
I came out with a score that was sufficient to get me a scholarship.
That's just weird. I had no idea. I've taken the LSAT and the SAT. I've never taken the GRE, but that just seems wrong. Bob, I don't know if you know this. We've got a whole bunch of callers just waiting to get their licks into you and me. So we'll just take them one by one, and then at 6 o'clock we'll interrupt and we'll switch technically over to your show, but then I hope we get to all our callers. Let's start with Gene.
Okay.
Go ahead,
hey,
Gene.
Hey, Mark. Hi, Bob.
Hey, Gene.
This is very interesting to me because getting sort of earlier in the program when Bob was going down his childhood memories is kind of it struck a chord because my dad's side is Baptist and my mother's side was Methodist and my mother was a seeker, so somehow I ended up Mormon, which is very interesting.
And
but
confusing.
I've often wanted to make this point. Now, I grant you that doctrinally, there's Mormonism and Baptist theology are 180 degrees out of sync. No common ground there at all. But as far as the kind of person that comes out of that, there isn't a spin distance worth of difference between it, as far as I can tell, emotionally speaking.
Yeah, probably a lot of truth in that, Gene, because some of the same psychological, you know, you can draw distinctions on, you know, no, we must pray to the east, no, we must pray to the west, or which book and what book, but at the end of the day, the psychology of almost all religions is identical.
Yeah, And that's
I don't know about that.
They create authoritarian superstructures, Mark, for purposes
not
of group
them.
Control.
Not all of them. The Quakers very much is from the roots below. Buddhists suggest that you can believe in other religion. I just think you tend to throw all religion in one basket, Bob.
Well,
many of them do. I'll grant you most of them do. I just
do
don't want
all
you to put it all there.
Do they all believe in some invisible critter?
No.
I mean, with the exception of the Unitarians, and you know how you run a Unitarian out of your community. you burn a question mark in his yard.
I'll tell you what, Gene, if you want to hang on into Bob's show, that's fine. Technically, this is the end of my show, but we're going to continue this right after the break. I just want to say thank you to everyone for listening to the Inside Scoop. If you're listening on the archive, check out Bob Kincaid's archive following, because this discussion is continuing right after this.
Many cases. And I have here a couple of quotes of Kissinger recently. About the war in Iraq, and he's asked about the situation in Iraq, and let me read you just a couple of quick quotes. He says, "A military victory in the sense of total victory over the whole territory imposed on the entire population is not possible."
Eaton. This is the Quality News Network. In Afghanistan, Taliban militants have released 12 of the 19 missionaries taken hostage 6 weeks ago. The release comes after a promise from Seoul to withdraw troops and cease missionary activity. The remaining hostages are expected to be released by tomorrow. Radical Shiite cleric Muqtada al-Sadr has suspended actions of his Mahdi army for 6 months and has claimed they will no longer attack U.S. and coalition forces. According to a Sadr aide, the anti-American cleric wants to reorganize the Mahdi army and rehabilitate it after breaking into factions. Coalition forces killed more than 100 Afghani militants today following an attack on a coalition envoy in Kandahar. One Afghan soldier was killed and 6 others wounded. There were no reports of civilian casualties. Also in Afghanistan, a suicide bomber attacked a bridge under construction in an eastern province, killing 3 U.S. soldiers. 6 other American troops were wounded. President Bush is in the Gulf Coast region today, marking the 2-year anniversary of Hurricane Katrina. The president visited a charter school in New Orleans, where he said better days are ahead. He will also visit Bay St. Louis, Mississippi, while in the region. The former Prime Minister of Pakistan said that Pervez Musharraf will step down as head of the military before the next presidential election. Officials say the decision is a significant step forward in a power-sharing deal with Pakistan's opposition government. Greek firefighters announced today that they have gained control over wildfires that have killed 63 people in recent days. The government has been hit with accusations of incompetence for their handling of the situation. After detaining them in a central Baghdad hotel last night, U.S. troops this morning released 8 captive Iranians, turning them over to Iraqi authorities. The U.S. said they were arrested for carrying guns without the necessary permits. The Washington Post reports President Bush is poised to ask